This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandhu. Today we are going through the 2013 Global Encryption Trends Study, and with me today in the studio is Jiro Shindo. He's the Senior Product Manager at Thales eSecurity. Jiro, welcome back. And today let's start off by talking about, you know, the executive summary of this study. You know, how was it conducted and, you know, what's different in this year compared to the other years that you've been doing?
Thank you. It's good to be back again. Well, this year was the ninth year that we did the study. So we actually studied eight countries in total. So the US, UK, Germany, France, Australia, Japan, Brazil, and for the first time this year, Russia. So what we did was we examined the global trends and the regional differences of encryption use. And we actually looked at not just the trends, but also how encryption has been adopted and the challenges in deploying such data protection technology.
Why those countries specific and not like there's no Southeast Asian countries?
Well, within Asia Pacific, we have Japan and Australia. So what the survey does is actually look at those which have regulation in place and perhaps slightly more mature data protection and encryption technologies in order for us to look at this survey, which does specifically look at encryption trends.
And Russia just entered the list this year. Why is Russia
is seen as quite a large growing market for us. So it was actually looking to see new markets where data encryption is coming into force, particularly in their IT organization. They're quite advanced in terms of payment security. And now they're looking, same as other countries, in how to protect their national and enterprise data protection needs.
Okay, so what have been some of the big encryption trends over the 9 years of this study?
9 years over this study, what we have seen is a very big difference in the corporations who have adopted a corporate-wide encryption policy, that is actually have it at the executive level to determine the encryption policy over the entire organization, as opposed to companies which do not have such policies. So those which work on an ad hoc basis, for example, they'll encrypt the database or encrypt the email or the web server, but not specifically have a defined strategy for how those encryption technologies are deployed. So what we found over the 9 years since 2005 is a gradual increase in the number of companies that actually have this corporate-wide encryption policy. So back in 2005, it was around 15% of those companies had a corporate-wide policy, and now that's grown to 35% last year. So the ratio is about 2-to-1 of companies which now have a corporate-wide encryption policy compared to those who just still work on an ad hoc basis.
So what are some of the key findings in this year's study then?
One of the key findings is that there has been a steady increase in deployment. Up to 35% of the organizations have an encryption-wide strategy. And most organizations do deploy it now to lessen the impact of a data protection breach, as opposed to comply or to protect their own brands and reputations.
What about Malaysia? Is Malaysia reflected of is a reflection of this trend?
At the moment, Malaysia is probably quite at the beginning of the curve. Only now has the protection PDPA Act has actually been enacted. And that is very different to, say, in the UK or certainly in the US, where they've had a number of years, both federal and industry-specific encryption and data protection models. So at the moment, they are probably still in the state where they are doing ad hoc encryption, encrypting the database, encrypting email, rather than having that corporate-level function pushing through this strategy.
What are some of the main drivers for using encryption technology solutions?
The main drivers are actually various across the enterprise, but one of the main drivers is obviously to protect their brand and reputation. But this year, that actually fell second to actually lessening the impact of a data breach. Many large companies, as you've seen, have had major data breaches. So those forensic investigations, people have been able to see what the impact is of having a data breach, which is having to suffer an audit and actually proving not only that your data is protected, but the keys that protect those data are also protected and segregated. And it's actually the business impact of a data breach, which is having more effect and is more of a driver for the adoption of encryption technology than perhaps protecting your brand and reputation.
Do you think organizations in Southeast Asia here have this mentality of, like, you know, it won't happen to me?
We have had that, and certainly I've talked to some CIOs here in Malaysia where they feel that their security posture is enough and we are doing enough. We don't hold certain consumer data. We're not needed to comply to this part of the Act. However, I'm sure the CEOs of the many major companies that have been data breached also felt that way, that they had layers of security and technology and they were secure. The fact is it has to be twofold. Technology itself is only good as its deployment, and the deployment is obviously administered by employees. So there has to be not only a corporate-wide policy, but corporate-wide training and understanding of people to actually look at to see where the data security breaches are and how to enforce them, not just with technology, but with the people and policies in place.
I guess it's kind of fitting that we're talking about this because recently there was the Heartbleed thing that kind of, it even affected people from the Facebooks, from Googles. And, you know, if those big boys could be hurt, I'm sure the smaller boys would be, you know, they have to be concerned as well.
Yes. And in actual fact, the smaller medium enterprises are the bigger targets because they do not have the millions of dollars to invest in the data security. And their data is just as valuable as a large organization.
Now, you know, in your study, I read there somewhere that, you know, encryption usage is an indicator of a strong security posture.
Yes.
What does this mean?
Well, it means that organizations that deploy encryption exclusively throughout the enterprise, as opposed to limiting its use to a specific purpose, such as point solutions, appear to be more aware of threats to sensitive and confidential information and therefore spend more on IT security. So in other words, encryption makes a strong contribution to an organization's overall security posture. So organizations with a strong security posture are actually three times more likely to have a corporate encryption strategy than those with a lower posture.
So this is just an image in a way.
It's an image and it is a fact. When we look at the amount that companies are spending of their IT security budget spending on encryption, year on year, that has increased significantly. So there is a very much a determination to use this technology to protect electronic data, but to ensure that its deployment is very effective as well.
You know, what are some of the biggest challenges in planning or, you know, executing a data encryption strategy?
Yeah, the biggest challenges really are the data discovery, actually determining what data is actually needed to be kept confidential and what data can be open. And actually determining how to protect that data, whether they're on critical systems, whether they're open systems. And when you think about cloud security, where is that data going? The new Malaysia PDPA law actually defines that even if the enterprise offloads it to a data processing center, the enterprise itself is still liable for any loss of that data. So it's definitely very much the focus of all these enterprises, especially in the more mature markets such as the USA, where they do have heavy, very heavy penalties and fines imposed by industry and also federal and state laws, that they must do everything they can to protect the data, not just for the consumer's protection, but for their own.
I'm speaking to Jiro Shindo, and the Senior Product Manager at Thales eSecurity. And in just a moment, we'll talk about how the Malaysian industry has changed since the PDPA Act took place. This is Tech Talk on BFM 89.9. Jeff Sandu here, and with me today is Jiro Shindo. He's the Senior Product Manager at Thales eSecurity, and we are going through the 2013 Global Encryption Trend Study. Jiro, you know, are we still facing a human error? You know, how big of, you know, leakages are caused by employees' mishaps?
Actually, within the survey itself, the leading factor and of loss of confidential data is actually employees' mistakes. So by far, most organizations believe that employees' mistakes account for almost a quarter of all the data losses that they were facing. Actually, it's up year on year from 26% last year to 27%. The other side that they're looking at is, of course, law enforcement and law policies. For example, if the law enforcement asks you to share data on a particular customer, chances are you will transfer their entire server to those law enforcement agencies. So they will have access to other data and they themselves may leak that particular data out, but you as an enterprise will still be responsible. The other side, of course, is system malfunctions. That accounts again for 15% of the data losses. But if you combine employees' mistakes with system malfunctions, that is by far a higher risk to data from these companies than actual hackers and malicious outsiders. The survey itself had 11% from the public sector, the remainder from enterprise and industry. Therefore, for industry themselves, they are looking at employees' mistakes and system malfunctions as the largest threat to data security than, for example, cyber attacks from foreign governments. Mm.
So how do you overcome something of a human error?
Well, again, it focuses on not just the technology, but also the enforcement of policy, actually giving adequate training to all employees for them to understand what data is kept secure and also the penalties involved in that data becoming lost. So it has to become a routine, a way of life. Just as everybody, when they leave their house, they will always lock their door. People also need to have the focus of always making sure data is secure, not transferring data into USB keys and leaving them lying around. Mm. It is the enforcement of that policy and also having specific technology that relies on perhaps more than just a password to protect vital encryption keys, using hardware or dedicated devices that enable users to actually split that level of control, not from one person, but over several people.
Mm. You know, in what industry do you see the growth of encryption, you know, besides the, you know, the usual banking sectors?
Well, the banking, of course, has had the most significant growth and is still there. One of the biggest increases we saw, about 6 or 7% year on year, is actually the hospitality sector. Mm. If you think about hotel groups with loyalty cards, they keep a lot of sensitive data. In fact, perhaps more sensitive data than you would get on a passport. On a passport, you know where they go. On a hotel bill, you know what they eat, when they eat, what movies they watch. So that kind of information has to be shared across borders. When you stay at a hotel in Malaysia and you transfer to a hotel in the US, they need to know what preferences they are. And they are seeing organizations that you would not typically think would need data security are having to secure that data because their brand is at stake, and also the customers who book with them are looking for a sense of privacy, and that's what the organizations need to do in terms of protecting data.
Mm. Any indication of the gaming industry?
The gaming industry itself is a strange one, really, because a lot of bets are done on an anonymous basis. However, what the gaming industry is looking for is perhaps a use of encryption called timestamping, actually securing exactly when the bet was made. Mm. Because obviously, if you make a bet 1 second after the horse wins the race, you could sweep the floor. And actually, there are some large gaming institutions that Taliesin Security deal with where we encountered that problem and supplied them with secure cryptographic hardware such as timestamping to actually secure that. So in a court of law or if they're in disputes, you can tell exactly when a bet was made in order to secure how much money you should pay.
Mm. You know, Malaysia has already kicked off the PDPA Act. How has this changed organizations in Malaysia since it was, you know, put into action?
Actually, interestingly enough, we held a seminar yesterday and we had a legal lawyer to actually come and explain the situation. So the problem with the PDPA, just as with any government-led confidentiality clause, is that it's a very broad clause. It's a one-size-fits-all. And if you're, for example, in the shipping industry, it's very different data to what you would have from a bank. There is a lot of ambiguity in terms of what constitutes personal data. Can your surname by itself be personal data? But is, you know, your address, of course, your name, your degree, for example, the grades you get at school. So within this, there are also exceptions. And what are those exceptions? So in a way, this will protect the consumer, but there is still a lot of ambiguity there that a lot of companies will struggle to actually find out. And the biggest trouble that they will have is actually the data discovery, what data they have, where that data resides, and how it should be protected. And that's very difficult to do using point solutions like just encrypting email or just your database. Having a broad corporation strategy, and more importantly, a key management structure to manage the encryption keys, becomes more of a pain and more important to the industry.
So how do organizations then go about in these gray areas?
In the grey areas are just that, the grey. They have to get outside help from consultants. They have to get legal advice. One of the mandates of the PDPA is that all organisations need to have an opt-in approach. So if they are going to use the data, they'll send emails. You may have already received many emails from airlines or hotels saying, with very long emails and asking you to say yes or no. And most people will just say, oh, yes, yes, yes. But in the event they say no, then those organisations organizations have to remove that data, and it limits how you can use it. So it is having an impact, and organizations will probably struggle with the initial impact of this, especially when one of the mandates of the PDPA is not being able to transfer information outside of Malaysia, unless you have certain exceptions. So what do you do if you use Dropbox or any kind of cloud solution? What do you do if your corporate headquarters in the United States? How do you transfer that data? Encryption may provide a solution, but again, the PDPA is not that clear on this.
What are some of the most important features of encryption technology solutions?
One of the most important features that has come out year on year is actually the pain of encryption key management and key certificates. This happens in organizations which are adopting many applications which use encryption, which is SSL authentication. Database encryption has seen the largest rise in terms of the key management issue. And it is here really where that important feature on how to manage those keys, how to protect them with more than just a password, comes into play. And when you have increasing amounts of data, the amount of electronic data is always going to be increasing. How do you protect it? How do you read it once it is encrypted? If you lose the key, that's the same as deleting your data. So these technologies and this kind of overview is becoming more important, which is why it's becoming more than just an IT issue.
What is the importance of hardware security modules, or I know you call it as HSM, as a part of a key management activities, and how should HSM be deployed or plan to be deployed in the next 12 months for organizations?
Actually, within our survey, we actually found that most times when they deploy the HSMs, it is to look at business efficiency and actually to reduce the operational cost. If we look at last year in 2012, they were 42% say they were deploying HSMs or employing key management to actually reduce operational costs. This year, it's gone well over 50%, or actually closer to 50%. So this is becoming a very So they're actually using the HSMs more than just a security device, but a way to automate key management and actually provide a trusted platform to the applications and the application server. Just like you have a mobile phone or a laptop that has, say, a chip in it to do the cryptography to encrypt a secure SIM card. All an HSM is doing is providing another additional hardware trusted platform, but this time to critical applications to protect their data.
Do organizations understand what level should they, you know, or at what stage they should deploy HSM?
They are beginning to, and really most organizations are very reactive. They until they hit a problem, they won't deploy a solution before they find the problem. So what you're finding is the most mature companies, the companies that have many encryption technologies, are now finding that they have a problem and are now trying to put in HSMs, which is very easy and simple to do. But as with anything, trying to retrofit security is very hard. Putting in security by design is the key to any IT project, but security still ranks number 4 or 5 on the list of priorities of any new system.
Jiro, it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Jiro Shindo. He's the Senior Product Manager at Thales eSecurity, and we were going through the 2013 Global Encryption Trends Study. This is Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station. We'll